listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Thanksgiving week, it's great to be with you. Maybe you are taking a family vacation. Maybe you're traveling far to see a loved one and you're picking your favorite podcast to listen to on the way. Remember that you can take a Trending with you. Turn your phone into a mobile radio. In studio with me today is Dr. Philip Chavez, and I had the great opportunity of meeting him at the Masculine Genius Institute a few months ago, and you have all kinds of incredible projects going on. Just tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Sure. Well, in my own background character development, philosophically and theologically, I've started a men's institute to try to help men find their place in the church and in the world. And of course, you probably understand as better as I do, men are quite displaced today, and they do need help. They need encouragement, but they need instruction on really what authentic manliness is.
You know, something that's been really weighing on my heart lately are so many of my single friends who are struggling to find a spouse,
sure,
both male and female. And maybe that's a delay in the development of their character. Maybe that's a slim picking in the field. I mean, there's so many different things. Maybe
there are
too much of a focus on career, perpetual adolescence for too long.
That's another. Absolutely.
We could go on, but this whole issue of developing the finished human being, someone who is turning toward our Lord in development, not that we're done developing, but we're continuing to develop as we should at the proper state in life, essentially. And that's what you're doing over at the Masculine Genius Institute.
Exactly.
But for men. So where can people find more of your content, videos, etc.?
Well, they could go to themasculinegeniusinstitute.org and they'll find all that they need. And there's a number of resources on there. But there's also other podcasts. And there is one special recording that does give an overview of manliness. So you can get a full picture of manliness if you just download the our recording.
Excellent. And you can also listen to former episodes that I have done with Dr. Philip Chavez, where we talk about what does the finished man look like and what is that development, finding more about his overall vision of what masculinity is. So I would like to jump in here because we have a lot coming up today. You know, just a couple weeks ago, we never covered it, was the mass shooting here in Southern California, Thousand Oaks, and just the horror of the victims and family members. And also the fires here. I mean, we are really seeing devastation to a community very quickly in two tragic ways. We're also going to be talking about the controversy over the last couple weeks of Milo Yiannopoulos and the interview that came out with him, kind of the first kind of tell-all conversation that's taken place. And actually, in a Catholic setting, which really poses some interesting conversations and opportunities for conversion and having an open heart. So I hope you guys stick with us to hear that. We'll talk about how Planned Parenthood is weaponizing taxpayer dollars against the taxpayers. Not just that you're paying for abortion, but you're paying to keep elected officials in those seats advocating to keep very rigorously pro-abortion, pro-death, anti-faith laws on the book, and much more to come. So don't go away. We will be here. I want to start, Dr. Philip Chavez is my guest today, with Milo Yiannopoulos, though, because you mentioned it as well, and it was weighing on my heart kind of sitting here watching what happened. So a dear friend of our show in Catholic media is Patrick Coffin.
Right.
And Patrick Coffin has his show, The Patrick Coffin Show, and he invites any kind of area of culture builder,
sure,
who is seeking truth. Maybe they don't align perfectly with a Catholic worldview. Maybe they have contrary ideas. He's opening up a dialogue of conversation.
Sure.
And he did an interview this past week that he released with Milo Yiannopoulos.
Right.
And before it even was released, people started to give him a major backlash for interviewing someone who, as they might say, claims to be Catholic but is living a gay lifestyle.
Sure.
Which is correct. This is a man who is Catholic, and he is in a relationship with a man. That is very clear, and he's very open and candid about it. However, I think that there's much that can be said about the entire interview and the conversation. I find that Milo Yiannopoulos is absolutely charming and endearing to listen to when he's speaking. And he's someone who is searching and fighting for truth and free speech in our country that's not even his home country.
Sure.
And, you know, we can get into a lot of this, but what were your initial thoughts from the interview as you heard Milo?
Well, certainly as he opens up, he's a very articulate man, and he's thought through a number of things, certainly not on the social and the political level. You're right. I think you just look at his eyes, you could see somebody who's struggling a little bit, who's searching. His background is interesting, and of course it's the juxtaposition of his positions on the church and conservatism, yet his lifestyle on the other end. It's somewhat of a fascinating juxtaposition alone, because it makes you wonder, and this is where I think people object to him. It's not that he holds one or the other, but he's trying to bring both together. And I think people find that inherently offensive.
Yeah, so what you're saying here is he says the Catholic Church is right. In doctrine. It's 2,000 plus years of tradition, plus years back of Jewish roots. It's
exactly
right about everything. From sex to what the church talks about, social justice in terms of economics, right?
Sure.
And what is fair and free for the human development, what it teaches about theology. However, he admits that he is in what, quote unquote, in the States is a civil marriage, etc. He considers it a civil partnership.
Sure.
And he knows that what he doesn't refer to necessarily as a marriage, or at least not on the interview, his civil partnership is not a marriage in the eyes of God.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the church is for sinners, and he knows he's not in a state of grace, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
In order, for example, Patrick Coffin at one point says, Milo, you are one confession away from receiving our Lord Jesus Christ in the Eucharist. And Milo pauses. He's willing to listen and
sure.
be challenged, and actually very vulnerable and humble in being willing to have the conversation.
Yeah, I think so. And I think in some way he probably accepted that interview as a way, too, of reaching out and to try to grow a little bit more. You know, those with same-sex attraction struggles or orientations, they are looking for a sense of acceptance. They're looking for something more love. The few personalities I have known with that, They are always searching because their hearts are not settled inside interiorly. With respect to his own lifestyle and his facing the contradiction of that within the church, I think he's caught up as many are. The same-sex attraction that he has, that he possesses, it's something as what Aristotle or St. Thomas would call second nature. In other words, it's so ingrained within him and with him, he can't really extricate himself out of that lifestyle. Because the drive is so strong from within that it keeps him still living that and just holding on to that, because it's what he knows, it's what he feels, and it's what he's oriented to.
Well, in just a testament to that, he talks at one point about how if he had discovered the church's teaching in its fullness about sexuality, say when he was in his early 20s, much younger, he said, I think it would have been much easier for me to take on and live that chastity type of lifestyle.
Sure.
But what you're talking about, he's now developed a second nature habit, way of living,
yes.
where he is seeking love and acceptance, and even talks about how, you know, his relationship with his partner, while we would not agree is the best for Milo, he talks about how there are ways that it has called him to be a better Christian. Now,
sure.
any friendship ultimately should call us to that, but there are also certain things in a friendship we shouldn't indulge in.
Exactly.
I might have a great friend who's not my spouse, and that just because I love them doesn't mean I should engage in sexual intimacy with them.
Exactly.
And so this is something that Milo's in the process, and I think it's quite beautiful. At one point, he talks about how the alternative to him living in this same-sex relationship
mm-hmm.
is the priesthood. And he said,
oh, interesting.
I'm not ready for that at this point in my life. But if I were to, yeah, the celibacy, celibate priesthood is something I would look for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's probably because in his own sexual relationships or relations, he hasn't really found a sense of satisfaction in that.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, he would be open to that. In terms of the orientation and the Christian call to love, you know, what is interesting of those with same-sex attraction, they do have a sensitivity to them, which does see into the needs of others in a certain key way. So you'll find that they are of a delicate nature. So sometimes they could see the needs of others, and they do have a heart to serve those needs. So to talk about them as unloving isn't entirely true. Maybe they don't love in maybe a proper level or a proper motive, but unless they have the drives to love.
And we can't say that they aren't capable of love. In fact, even in their same-sex relationships, there is love there. Perhaps absolutely a disordered way sure. of sexual intimacy, but there can be joy. There can still be love, but we're missing the point how God has created our bodies
That's
to be.
Right.
And part of what God has created our bodies to be is that we're both called to love, called to activity, but we're also called to self-reflect and to pause and to withdraw, to wait, to have self-control. And this is something that Milo talks about as a huge part of the Christian life that he finds so invigorating that it calls for self-discipline.
That's right. Because in that lifestyle, and those he knows who are sharing that lifestyle, there's a lot of indulgence that's way off the charts and somewhat uncontrollable. So yes, the kind of things we teach in the Catholic Church about restraining your passions and all the rest and exercising self-control can be very attractive.
And see, sure. I think that this is what's fantastic about Milo, because Milo's in a pursuit of rediscovering authentic masculinity, and he's really encouraging this within the Catholic Church. And he's saying this is part of our major problem with the sex abuse, which we're going to come sure. back to in a minute, a little bit about how he is actually a sex abusive victim from within the church, and how if we were to rediscover authentic masculinity, and he says it one point, quote, manhood is what is lacking, essentially, especially in the hierarchy of the clergy and therefore in the development of the people. And if we had this, we would be in a different place.
That's right.
Today in the church. With me is Dr. Philip Chavez. We're talking about Milo Yiannopoulos, very controversial, but I think there are some really important things that we have to say about him being willing to have this conversation, first interview in a while, in a Catholic setting.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
It's great to be back with you. In studio with me is Dr. Philip Chavez. He's working with the Men's Institute. Where can people find your content online?
They could go on themensacademy.org. And I'll find other resources there, too.
Okay. At the Men's Academy, you can talk and work through the finished man. What is necessary for character development in men, whether it's your children, high schoolers, young boys, or also maybe you yourself, you're an adult and you're wanting to continue your personal development. So I want to talk here about Milo Yiannopoulos just a little longer. So if you're just joining us, please go back, listen to the episode at radiotrending.com, because there's a lot of controversy in this conversation. But part of what has come out is that about a little over a year ago, close to 2 years ago, Milo Yiannopoulos had been very active in the conservative commentary journalism sure. region. And he, in a late night, heavily drinking state, did some sort of live video. And he's talking about, one, in part, that he is a victim of sexual abuse from a priest in the church in Europe. And two, he talks about, he's making a point at one point about, for him, although he was about 13, 14 years old, he right. consented to the sexual interaction that took place. And he was just trying to say from his own experience that he believes at that point, for that age, he was consenting. He wasn't trying to say that what was happening was this great thing, but he was trying sure. to say that I think he was really trying to take some responsibility. Mm-hmm. He said, I was aware of what was going on. Now, that priest has since years later committed suicide, should I add, in this entire situation. But Milo, who was, yes, harmed by the sexual abuse, also emphasizes that there's two different types of, I guess you could say, gay priest pedophilia within the mm-hmm. Catholic Church. And I want to just emphasize this very briefly. He talks about one which would say be the, as we call it, the Lavender Mafia, the group of people who have an agenda that they are forcefully promoting what is contrary to the church's teaching on sexuality.
Sure.
And someone like a former Cardinal McCarrick, who was forcing himself on seminarians for the sake of power and manipulating individuals. And then he says there's another kind, someone who might even be a more traditional, faithful to what the church teaches, but is wrongly living out their call to celibacy and sure. chastity. And they're engaging in what you could say consensual sex with mm-hmm. other individuals as
sure.
well.
Something like his own lifestyle.
Yes.
Away. Sure.
Exactly. And so, and he's emphasizing the difference. And I think that that's a really important point from someone who's living that lifestyle, saying, yes, he said, there is a lot of older men preying on younger men and children, but there are also men who are engaging consensually, even with minors, not saying that that's okay, with minors at the same time. And it's just an area where he's talking about, this is not okay. And he speaks out against his own community and talks about how the church's teaching is the authentic teaching on sexuality.
Sure. You know, it's when you talk about consensuality, Timory, there's a lot of dynamics here. And of course, from perpetrator to victim, what it means to be consensual is two different dimensions here. Now, for himself, if he considered himself in some way consensual, you know, one of the things that after a man is abused that way, and maybe a woman too, they feel a lot of guilt. So they feel like he must feel something within too that says, well, I contributed this. I did surrender to this. I didn't resist this. But again, somebody like that too is put in a situation of being highly vulnerable. And I imagine priests in that situation who are perpetrators are very controlling, very manipulative, very strong, very domineering. And so the poor young man, even though there may have been a sense that where he did surrender to this, in a sense he had maybe not had much of another choice or much of other means to really resist.
And we also have to remember, given the age, although he may be consenting for his state in life, also given the age, I've worked with women and men in crisis pregnancy situations, right? Mm-hmm. Who are involved in that situation. And I could mention any number of 18, 19, 20, even 21-year-old men and women who, yes, consented to the sexual intimacy, may not have been wanted still.
Sure.
But they also didn't fully understand the ramification, the long-term impact, not just physically.
Sure.
We talk about STDs and so on, but the emotional impact
exactly.
of that decision. The maybe stunting of growth in their human character.
Sure. And yes, for young people, it is hard to see the fullness of what sexual maturity is really oriented to. So yes, if you're blind to those things, again, it's hard to be a full consent, not really knowing what's ahead or the impact of everything you're doing.
Right.
Sure.
Right. A huge lack of understanding. We live in an age where young people are taught that sex is liberating. Right?
Exactly.
Sex is a great thing. Sex is normal. You know, kids are being taught from a very, very young age to engage in self-discovery in their body. So to them, they don't understand what sex is, that it is a very high calling meant to be within the confines of marriage, and that it is a great good for the union of two human beings and for the creation of another human life.
Sure. And really that is that kind of reality, that kind of truth is something they should be witnessing in their own parents and the reality of families around them, of couples, of parents who are very faithful to each other, where there's strong family dynamics and strong family interaction. I think it's when people see that and understand that, I think then they see the fuller context of sexuality. Without that, I think it's difficult.
Absolutely. And that's where we have this call within the church. We have the truth of authentic sexuality. And when people actually hear, well, what is theology of the body? What does life-giving, self-giving love mean?
Mm-hmm.
What does it call us to? Why does priestly celibacy matter? Right?
Sure.
Why is that such a high calling? Say, yes, I am a sexual human being, but I can integrate my sexuality according to my state in life.
Exactly. Ultimately, it calls one to service. And so a priest or religious, they serve or they give of themselves in love by sacrificing that. Couples, man and wife, surrender to the ends and the actions for the sake of family and family life. So in both cases, sexuality is a channel by which one can express what we're all called to do, that is to give ourselves in love.
Absolutely. I want to talk here about depression and anxiety. I have been talking to people in many fields, from education, high school, college campuses, all different types of workplaces. And we're seeing an increase in the issues of anxiety, depression, mental health, and suicide rates. I mean, especially among the young. But something I'd like to talk about, especially because it had me thinking in light of the recent Thousand Oaks shooting. We have seen reports that many of the shootings that have taken place across our country here in the United States, not necessarily including the actual terrorist attacks that were taking place here in the U.S., a lot of these shootings, for example, Columbine, the Virginia Tech shooting, the Colorado movie theater shooting, all of these shootings, the shooters, even Florida most recently, not too long ago, the people who were the perpetrators, right, were the individuals who were also on either getting over an antidepressant, who were withdrawing from it, right, or who were for many years, maybe months or maybe a few months, or whatever it might be, have been on antidepressant and anxiety medication.
Right. And so, yes, and so there has been some correlation that during the advent of these antidepressants that have been used and been introduced in society, we have been seeing these random acts of violence and or suicidal behavior. So there is some correlation just on the level of history and level of time.
Yeah. For example, since prior to 1980, when someone was depressed and had anxiety, it wasn't leading to violence or necessarily suicide. There was severe depression and anxiety. It wasn't until 1980 when Prozac came onto the market, and then other generic knockoffs or other companies saw, hey, there's a lot of money in this industry. Did suddenly we saw not only an uptake in mental illness in general, but we also saw an uptake in violence associated with mental illness and suicide. And that's where we're seeing all of these different shootings were not taking place prior to 1980.
That's
this is something very, very new to our country here in the United States. And again, it's heartbreaking to see that I think sometimes when we use medication in these instances, and there certainly are people who do need that type of help, that we're covering it with a Band-Aid rather than addressing maybe the long-term sexual abuse in their life.
Yeah, or any kind of deeper cause.
Right. I mean, so many things. Divorce,
there really are.
Abandonment.
There really are.
I mean, we could go on and
on. Which do cause that lack of feeling displaced in society, the lack of, the depression. Often it does have those sociological, familial factors that are the lack of being raised in a home with love is a great cause to that. But two, even the gender confusion we've talked about before, I think leaves somebody with a sense of a lack of self-identity. And without identity, it's hard for one to really move forward in life.
On the next episode that you're joining me on, you can check that out at radiotrending.com if you do not have it on your local station. We're going to be talking about how now there's a new clothing line, really popular person heading it up, of gender neutral clothing, and how, you know, we're telling kids to express and figure things out and tell me how you feel. Well, it's one thing to say how you feel, and you should say how you feel, but it's another thing to know what your body is and is not.
That's right. And to deny that there is that reality is really to do a disservice to children. To deny that they have a certain sex character identity, if I could use those terms, is to do a child a grave service, because then again, it goes back to a lack of their finding some kind of identity of who they are. Unless they get to that, they can't really see their self-worth, or they can't really see their purpose in life.
Right. And again, it's not getting to the root cause of the symptoms for the human person. We can't just treat a person as another cog in the machine. Okay, we give you this medication, we move on. And unfortunately, a lot of symptoms, even for example, the symptom of seeking an abortion is a Band-Aid for what's going on in a person's life.
That's right.
No woman really, truly, for the sake of an abortion, really wants an abortion. If she does, it's because she's developed a pattern of behavior and lifestyle that has told her that's what she wants.
Sure.
But deep down inside, women today know that abortion, hormonal contraception, the chemical impact on the body, these are things that are harming women in our country today. And we need to seek to be bearers of hope and truth.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. As you say, the sense of life to a woman is just so keen and so intimate. They all know inherently it's wrong. Unless they really come to understand the meaning of the deeper meanings of sexuality, which we've been talking about, they really can't see these realities or the sins they fall into for what they really are.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Dr. Philip Chavez is in studio with me. He is working at the Men's Academy, working with men to finish the development that is so lacking in our country and our world for men. Mm-hmm. What's right. the website again for anyone who wants to check out those?
It's themensacademy.org. And they can go on to get a free download of what I call the 18 Pillars of Manliness, where they can get an overview, a full picture of manliness in 1 hour.
You also have books as well going deeper into developing that masculine virtue.
Yes, as well as some other resources. And the website directs it. They can find that at mensacademypress.com.
Excellent. I want to talk today about Planned Parenthood. You know, we're just a few weeks off still from this recent election. We're just barely about a month off of a very controversial Supreme Court nomination
right.
that was so heated. I mean, the polarization of two groups in some ways in our country has been shocking. I mean, there wasn't anywhere that I don't think was talking about watching the hearings, getting on, hearing the interviews, and there was an attitude of a yay or a nay in either direction.
Right.
But were we forgetting the whole time that behind this whole issue was one issue, and that was abortion?
That's right.
And so I want to talk just after the elections about what's been going on at Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
So Live Action just recently released a report talking about essentially how Planned Parenthood has been weaponizing the own taxpayer money against the people.
Right.
And so what they've come out showing, and we've known this, that our federal government through us has been funding over $500 million at least
That's
a
right.
year to Planned Parenthood.
That's right. About 40% of their budget, I think, more or less.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is shocking when we see that their income continues to just skyrocket. I mean, they are making a surplus of money. But this is what's interesting. Their services across the board have declined. Their number
right.
of facilities have shut down. And, you know, even if you were to look at different things, for example, breast exams have gone down by 62%. Pap smears have gone down by 74%. Cancer screenings down by 67%.
Sure.
Even contraception's down by 32%. All across the board, they've got a 10% decline. Abortions haven't gone down. In fact, they have a larger market of abortions in this nation.
Yeah. You know, in some way, those statistics did surprise me because I thought the contraception push by them was a little bit deeper and heavier. But it is something for them to profess that they do provide health services when they're actually on a very steep decline for doing so.
Absolutely. And actually, to the point of contraception, that's a very good observation, because it's not that contraception is necessarily on the decline. What it is when we had the HHS mandate mandating funding for free, no copay hormonal contraception, all of a sudden a ton of organizations, companies found there's actually a lot of money in the business mm-hmm. of providing contraception.
Right.
There are organizations like The Pill who are advertising to young people today online with cute videos emphasizing how you can receive your hormonal contraception in the mail for free. Doesn't have to be Planned Parenthood, because it is so taxpayer funded that it's easy access for other businesses to use that as a business model.
Yeah. And, it, you know, Paul VI, too, predicted things like this, that once we lose the true meaning of human sexuality, many of things like this would happen. Even governments would start legislating such that these things can be subsidized and funded and even forced upon the people.
Forced upon the people. And for example, contraception, we are being forced to pay for it.
Right.
We are being forced to pay for abortion in our country. China, though, is one example. Talk about women's rights, where we should be advocating for the women in China who are committing suicide at a rate of 500 women a day. That is the only place in the world where we have more yeah. women than men committing suicide, and it's because they have forced abortion.
That's right. And I would imagine, and because of that, too, they're marginalized in a number of ways. But yeah, more abortion of its nature leads a woman to despair, because they've contributed to, in some way or form, even in China, to the destruction of human life. And to a woman, at its core, that's highly devastating and will cause that suicidal tendency. Sure.
It is heartbreaking what is happening. But this is relevant to today, because we are going in the path freely to where China already is.
That's
We're
right.
already choosing not to have children, even worse. In
That's
some
right.
ways, we think that we are so free, we can choose to be evolved and not marry and not have children. Well, you've been asking, or I've been saying, hey, you know, Planned Parenthood is weaponizing your money against you. Well, you're
right.
maybe wondering, Timmer, I don't see how that is yet. If the federal government is giving $500 million annually, at least, that's not even state to state funding.
Yeah.
to Planned Parenthood, what that allows is for Planned Parenthood to focus on their political gains. In fact, the former CEO of Planned Parenthood, Cecil Richards, talked about how their aim was essentially to be the largest, quote, kick butt political organization out there. And in fact, just this past election, what did we see? Follow the money trail. $160 million went to public policy, movement building, door-to-door advocating, promoting health equity, and then another $85 million went to fundraising.
Right. Yes, and so the money that they receive from the government really enables that. It's extra money. If all their health services are down, certainly they have the more disposable income to do all these things.
So any additional funding, any fundraising, any money that comes in, that's going to funnel right over to their political advocacy because their quote-unquote health services are covered and subsidized by the government.
Right.
So you're subsidizing political gains for politicians who only support abortion and now gender ideology that is so damaging to who we are.
That's right. And they'll continue to protect Planned Parenthood. Who have helped them get elected, they'll continue to protect them and that funding.
And this is why we're seeing a difficulty with nominating judges who support the Constitution, who support the basic right to life.
That's right.
Because they are in the pockets of Planned Parenthood.
That's right.
So they're going to oppose any nomination they need to. They're going to veto any bill that comes across their desk as governors that would suddenly create fetal pain protections for the baby or heartbeat protections for the child. This is why we're seeing this just absolute turn away from science and truth and actually what's good for women. Even the getting rid of basic laws that make it so that an abortion clinic needs to have hospital rights at a hospital within 20 something miles in case something goes wrong during the procedure.
Sure. And any of those clinical and medical restrictions seem to be overlooked and whatnot. Yeah. And too, the advocacy goes as far as advocating for abortion without any kind of restriction. And with the money of Planned Parenthood, they're doing that in a number of ways.
So we see that in their 2019 plan for Planned Parenthood, they intend to expand access to abortion in the United States. That is their plan. In fact, abortion is so accessible that even our governor here in California that is in favor of access to abortion happened to veto a bill that would have expanded chemical abortions to women on college campuses. Because he said there are so many abortion clinics right by these college campuses. I think he said either within a 6 or 7 mile radius that we don't need to make it free directly on campus. And he says, California believes in having access to abortion, but he vetoed that bill. Not because it was some pro-life decision, but because it wasn't necessary because we have that much access to abortion.
Yeah. And I think, too, maybe I think he just wanted to support, too, these organizations that did have these separate clinics as opposed to having them those services at the universities.
At the universities. You know, looking at this, we have a major uphill battle and we need to pay attention to where the language and the cultural debate is at.
Sure.
Because, yes, you and I agree that human life starts at conception, right?
Right.
And that we are meant to fight vigorously for that life to be protected.
That's right.
For that woman's soul and that man's soul not to be damaged by this decision of abortion.
Sure.
However, that's not where the cultural conversation is. The cultural conversation is this. Planned Parenthood just brought in a new CEO, Dr. Leanna Wayne, who is really focused on the fact that abortion, contraception, it's all basic health care. She's an immigrant from China, and she got basic health care at Planned Parenthood growing up when she didn't have a lot of resources. And so the conversations that abortion is a basic human right, it's like water.
Yeah. And that kind of mentality will be continually fostered insofar as the meaning and the true ends of human sexuality are lost. And the further more deviant we get from the right order of the family, from the right order of sexuality, from the right order of human relationship, abortion will be that continual fruit of our deviation of a healthy, proper understanding. Sure.
So here's my question, because I think we're at a point where a lot of people are pro-life in this country. However, not to the point of maybe disagreeing with a friend who's having an abortion.
That's right.
You know, I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I wouldn't force that decision on you. Or I'm personally opposed to abortion, but yeah, I'll take you to your abortion appointment to kill your child. How do we regain a sense of this is what abortion is, a killing of a human being, rather than a conversation about basic health care?
Yeah, that's very difficult, Timurine, I think on a number of levels. I think people consent to take people or to enable them for abortions at a false sense of compassion or a false sense of human love. Two, even though people are personally opposed, as they may say, to abortion, yet in some way permitted on other levels, I think there's a disconnect, too, on many of levels. You know, you're not just from values of the family, but even for God himself, or that there's repercussions, there's really a commandment to not contribute to the doing of killing or the doing of evil. So we're in a society, too, that has less of an understanding or less of an appreciation for the laws of God as well.
Absolutely. So this lack of understanding for who we are, lack of respect for others, misplaced sympathy, right? And being empathetic when really we're not being empathetic. We're empathy, you know, we're looking and having understanding for people where they are, mm-hmm. right? That doesn't mean we all of a sudden condone what's going on. That's saying, I understand this is hard right now. Maybe you know a teenager or a young person who's in college and they're pregnant. They're saying, my parents are going to kill me. I'm not going to be able to go to school anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand. I'll be there with you, help you tell your parents. You know, these simple moments, that's empathy.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, to stand up with true courage, I think. And an understanding, too, I think, if we are to uphold the sanctity of human life and defend it, that God will give us the wherewithal and the grace to proceed with courage.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez. He is in charge of the Men's Academy. We will be coming back, and we're going to discuss a little bit about a new application to be on the endangered species list.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
My guest is Dr. Philip Chavez. He is founder of the Men's Academy. And Dr. Chavez, you were recently in Rome.
Yes.
And one of the projects you worked on was a major men's conference.
Right.
And you presented something very important to the hierarchy of the church, I think at a time very needed.
Sure.
Having to do with men in the Catholic Church.
That's right. The conference was the first international men's conference, basically spearheaded by the men of St. Joseph in Poland. 130 men came, mostly European, Eastern Europeans, virtually all Europeans, actually, only a handful of Americans. But the idea was to come together and discuss what it is to walk that journey of a man. What's fascinating, too, about that whole enterprise, most of these groups and most of the men represented, most of them came under the auspice of being part or advocating for men's groups. And I'm finding that, and it is true, I think, men are rebuilt again society when they are collaborating with other men. And so the healthy masculine growing and development of men, a lot of men are finding themselves working through their issues and working through holiness by being part of a small men's group.
Now, kind of putting our finger on the pulse of what's going on with men internationally, we see the crisis in the States. We talk about it often on Trending and in the West in general. But what's maybe coming out of the conference, the biggest challenges to men in other parts of the world right now?
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised in many respects. Even when I gave a presentation on the nature of manliness, whatnot, as men as a leader, protector, provider, and the connection with a man as a priest, prophet, and king, many of them were able to understand those connections actually very readily. You know, it's interesting, Timur. I think what's unfortunate in one respect is that I don't think Europeans really see the problems or can appreciate them, or have a certain passion about overcoming them the way we Americans do. You know, we see things that are broken, we want to fix it.
Entrepreneur mindset.
Yeah, that's right. There's some of that cowboy mentality to just move forward, and just fix whatever needs fixing. But in Europe, it's a little different. They're a little more calm, a little more laid back about some of the problems in the church and that they're facing in the world, which is unfortunate. But they do recognize the need. Men are displaced. But the problem is, I don't think as we see in America, some of those deeper root causes, I think they're unfortunately missing a lot of those.
So yeah. They kind of need to be told, hey, you're That's being right. displaced. Like the European culture is something they do so much better than we do, is that they stop, they sit back, and they enjoy.
That's right.
They spend time around, even just, you know, the delay in getting your ticket at the end of the meal to pay. Because that attitude of sitting back, being with one another is there. And so sometimes it's easy when we have this attitude of just moving along, as mm-hmm. we always do, and not pausing to reflect and say, what are the challenges? Which I think that entrepreneurship, that American attitude is like, what's the problem? What's the dream? Let's get there. What's
right.
in the way?
That's right. Yeah. And so you have to remember, too, after World War II, the whole of Europe really was trying to recover from the devastation of that war. And they moved into a very socialistic, even in some cases, mm-hmm. very Marxist kind of platform in most mm-hmm. of the countries. And what I find, though, the socialism kills manliness. Mm-hmm. It kills initiative and manliness. It kills the sense of a man being a provider, and to some extent, even a protector and also a leader of his family. In many European countries, Italy especially, it's the women who are employed and the men are not. So the women are more preferred in the job market than men. So I think in many ways, you have men who are just really struggling, yes, to be providers of families. And so the sense of the family unit in Europe is rapidly disappearing. Of course, well, some countries more than others.
Well, and part of that is a socialization of education, and how the
That's
goal
right.
in socialized education, which we are experiencing here in the United States, is the separation of the child from the home as much
That's
as possible.
Right.
It's no longer the parents who educate or even form the children, which is the exact opposite of
That's
what
right.
spouses are called to.
Exactly.
Spouses are called to the procreation education of children. And today, many spouses are not procreating and they're not educating their children.
That's right. And that holds too, especially with the faith. I find that the sense of parents passing on the faith in Europe is really not there. They see even the passing on faith even as institutionalized. So for example, even the public schools in Italy, they have courses in the Catholic faith. But you see, parents are now seeing it. We're seeing the instruction of the Catholic faith now, strangely enough, in secular schools. So more and more in Europe is it being removed from the family. Mm-hmm. And when faith is removed from the family, there will always be a crisis.
And now that is a great thing to see Catholic education taking place in the schools where the kids are. However, sometimes the problem is if it's one, watered down Catholic education, but two, our faith is something that is passed on person to person.
That's right.
There's a reason that Jesus came and was the incarnate person of Jesus Christ.
That's
why
right.
he appointed 12 apostles. Why, in order to receive holy orders, there's a laying on of hands mm-hmm. to receive the sacraments. You can't get your confession over the phone. It's personal.
That's right. Our faith is personal in terms of what even the popes have talked about, especially prior to the Second Vatican Council, of the need for that instruction to be not just personal, but by parent to child. Remember, it's the parents who have it's incumbent upon them to instruct their children. They have the duty to do so, and the father being responsible above all.
As we're talking about the responsibility to have children, I've been mentioning that there's a new application to be on the endangered species list. This is actually, the movement is coming out of Canada. There was a video, 1 minute long video, that I just had a smile of just being endeared by this video of these children, but at the same time, not just children, but also tears at the same time, mm-hmm. as there are people with Down syndrome who are asking to be included on the endangered species list. You might ask why. 67% of children who are diagnosed as potentially being children with Down syndrome, 67% are aborted in the United States. 9 out of 10 are aborted in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, that is shocking.
98%, almost 100% of babies who are predicted to have Down syndrome in Denmark are aborted. And in Iceland, they almost have what some might say a 100% success rate at obliterating Down syndrome in their country. They've maybe had 4 a year that have been born over the last like 15 years.
Yeah, that's shocking.
I'm looking at this, and what kills me is that I have known so many women working within the realm of crisis pregnancy issues where they get a prenatal diagnosis mm-hmm. of their baby.
Sure.
And it is wrong.
Sure.
And so that's one caveat. And that's just something I've seen day in and day out mm-hmm. with women in crisis pregnancy. That doesn't even count the fact that just because a child has some form of a syndrome or a disease, does that mean their life isn't worth living?
That's right. Yeah, in this case, this is just a sign of the great the respect for human life that is greatly lacking. And that really is all human life. And to see that the handicapped in this sense are not, they do not have that kind of dignity, really, it is a deep crisis. But again, it bespeaks of repercussions of misunderstanding of sexuality, misunderstanding of the family values, the ability for one to give of themselves and love and to sacrifice for these kids. And I think really, this is often committed by parents who don't want to make those sacrifices to raise such children.
I mean, I think of family members on both sides of the spectrum who are young and sick with Down syndrome and other things. And then I think of the opposite end of the spectrum, who are sick, who are suffering, maybe toward the end of life. And yet these are the same people we want to discard, to get rid of. Yet these are the people who, the suffering is not in vain if we understand that we can offer it up for just our salvation, but the salvation of others. And I look at this, and looking at this video, there are young children and adults with Down syndrome dressed up as whales, dressed up as polar bears. At the very end of the video is a little itty bitty baby with Down syndrome with a little pack on its back because it's an endangered turtle, sea turtle. And I'm looking at this, and they're begging you, and I'm asking you to join us worldwide. Tweet this out. Send it on social media. EndangeredSyndrome.com is where you can go and sign the petition to make these children, bringing them onto the endangered species list.
Yeah. Yeah, these initiatives are very important. But you know, too, Timmy, I think much of this happens because of our failure to take care of the young, the elderly, and whatnot. I think in society, we fear what it is to take care of others, to make sacrifices. So what's happening now, we're putting children in to be educated by others. And even the elderly, there's a phenomenon that's only happened the last 100 years of putting them in elderly homes. So we're losing a sense of what it is to nurture, to take care of human life. And I think when we do that again, then we'll see the dignity of the young, but we'll see even the dignity of the elderly who are in equal a handicap capacity. And we're failing to see that dignity. And we don't want to be around it anymore. So we put these people away from us as we do the handicapped and others.
You mentioned this a second ago, that fear settles in. And I think that this is something we've really got to cling on to. And it's not just in handling people who are elderly and sick or young and sick, but it's all areas of our life. What we are afraid of are the exact things that are going to challenge us, shape us, mold us, and grow us. And those are the things with strength we need to run toward.
Yeah. And two, as I mentioned before, to put one's trust in God. Because if we're put in a situation which has to be heroic, or we're put in a situation by which we have to exercise maybe an extra level of self-giving, that God will give us the grace to make it through that. That if we follow God's plan, if we follow His will, that if we venerate and respect human life and follow through with that, but it'll give us what we need to endure and to be really those who sacrifice in the image of His Son.
That is such a gift that God is giving us if we are only open to those graces.
That's right.
That is Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. Where can people find you online?
On themensacademy.org.
And so you can go and check out all of his resources, books, CDs, downloads for free, podcasts. He is working to bring about the development of the finished man so that we can have a healthier priesthood, marriages, fathers, and wildly developing young men who, yes, may be wild at heart in times, are developing into virtuous human beings. You can reach me on Twitter at Timmery. And if you enjoy the show, you can send me a note at radiotrending.com/contact.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To learn more about Timmery Millington, visit timmery.com.